Olympic cyclist John Kennedy Howard once said, "The bicycle is a curious vehicle. Its passenger is its engine." But how many people would want to be that engine for a 4,152-mile trip across America on two wheels? New York Times obituary columnist Bruce Weber has pedaled across the country alone, starting in Portland and ending up in New York City, and he documents his ride in his book, Life is a Wheel, Love, Death, Etc., and A Bike Ride Across America. It's published by Scribner. I'm very pleased that it has brought Bruce Weber back to our show. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Nice to see you again.
Is it ironic that an obituary writer would want to put his life on the line like this?
I suppose it's semi-ironic, yes.
Hadn't you made a similar trip 2 decades before?
I did, in 1993, when I was 39.
So what possessed you to do this again?
Well, on the first trip, it was kind of a question of because it's there. I had been a cyclist, and I thought, well, this is probably the last time I'll get to do it. And then it turns out 20 years later, it's still there. And, you know, people ask me, was this a midlife crisis kind of thing? And I guess the short answer is yes, it was.
Did your friends and family understand what you were doing, why you were doing
it? I think so. You know, they had kind of gone through it with me the first time. They didn't really understand then, but, you know, I sort of pounded it into their brain. You know, the other thing was that this time around, I had it in mind to write a book.
How different was this trip because of all technological advances available to you from the previous one?
Well, there were a couple of things. First of all, I went on a much better bike. Bicycle technology has improved enormously in the last 20 years. And one of the advantages that I gave myself since I had gotten 20 years older was that I spent a lot of money on a custom-made bicycle. I wanted to give myself, you know, the right tools. But in addition, you know, I was carrying a cell phone and an iPad, and the stories that I was filing for the Times, I could just write them and then hit a button and send them. In 1993, when I wrote stories about the trip for the Times, I was carrying a notebook, writing the stories in longhand and phoning them into something called the recording room, which no longer exists, in which someone would answer the phone. I would tell them who I was. They'd hit the button on a tape recorder, and I'd read the stories into the tape recorder to be transcribed later.
How would the trip have been different had you camped and cooked your own food instead of staying in hotels and motels?
Well, I probably would have gotten a lot less sleep, and it would have been terrifically grumpier, I would guess.
But aren't there some stretches where the motels are few and far between?
Yes, there are, and, I did carry a tent and a sleeping bag with me, but it was sort of on the theory that if you carry an umbrella, it's not going to rain.
Well, it did rain.
It did rain on me, yes, but fortunately, I never had to sleep on the ground in this trip. There were a couple of places where I did think I was going to have to, but strangers came through, either offering me a place to stay. There was one motel owner in North Dakota who said, "Look, I don't have any room for you, but why don't you try the monastery down the road where the monks sometimes take in strays?" And lo and behold, they did.
You're 20 years older than you were for the first trip.
18, actually.
But it must have made a difference of physically.
Yes.
You'd had all sorts of problems in the intervening years.
I had the problems that a lot of people have, you know, the general wearing out of various parts. Yes, it was harder. This trip was slower. I went, about 50 to 55 miles a day instead of 65 to 70, which I did the last time.
And did you try to keep to a strict miles per day regimen?
No. I wanted to average about 50 miles a day or 300 miles a week. That was sort of the plan from the beginning. If I was only going to go 44, and if it was 44 miles to the next town, and the town after that was another, 35, and I was exhausted, then I was perfectly happy to give up at 44.
Well, were there ever times when you thought there's simply no way I'm going to be able to do this thing?
Yes, particularly at the beginning. People ask me how I trained for the trip, and you can't really train for exercising all day every day without exercising all day every day. So I knew that the first couple of weeks of the trip I was going to be bicycling myself into shape. And that was pretty difficult emotionally for a while. And there were, sometimes in eastern Washington, and then approaching the Rocky Mountains, where in my motel room at night I was trying to come up with a plan for feigning an injury so that I could come home without losing face.
Do you see any connection between writing and bike riding?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that the book posits is a long solitary bike ride as a metaphor for the long solitary ride that we are all individually on, and I talk about how there is no room in the world for most writing projects that the finished result doesn't make for itself. A piece of writing has to make its own home in the world. Generally, it's nobody's waiting for it, and the same is true of a cross country cyclist. You get on a bike at the beginning of a trip, and you can only see so far in front of you. Same thing as somebody who's trying to write a book.
Well, one of the differences between the first ride and this one is your parents were there to greet you when you got to the George Washington Bridge in the first one.
That's true.
And this time, just all alone?
This time I was by myself.
Would it have been better? I mean, obviously, you chose to do it alone, mm-hmm. but there are people who will attempt these sorts of things with a partner.
There are groups, but by the way, it's not the easiest thing in the world to find somebody to do this with at this age. Hey, by the way, how'd you like to leave home for 3 months and push your body to exhaustion every day and ride a bicycle across the country with me, you know?
Well, even part of the way. You did have photographers from the Times
right.
joining you at certain points along the way.
I did find a couple of there were a couple of times when people did ride with me for a day or two.
But what about when you're riding through places like Montana and North Dakota where you don't see anyone for hundreds of miles?
Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but for hours at a time anyway. There's something existentially very satisfying about this. People ask me what I think about on rides, and the interesting thing is that really what you think about is riding a bicycle. It's not a meditation. It's a focusing activity. You're thinking about your body, particularly somebody who is my age, which part of it is hurting, and the bicycle and safety and the road quality. So there's a lot of things to focus your attention.
Well, there are the big trucks that scare us when we're driving.
Indeed.
Did you find yourself riding on the shoulder a lot?
No, well, that's what you do. I mean, on the roads that in which you travel, you hope for a wide, clean shoulder, which is delivered only a small percentage of the time.
And then there are those downpours.
Yes,
you don't have windshield wipers.
Don't have windshield wipers. The last I had great weather, only a couple of days of rain until I got to Michigan, and from Michigan on east, it rained 3 out of every 4 days. So I was pretty wet and pretty cold by the time I got home.
My guest is Bruce Weber, whose latest book is "Life Is a Wheel: Love, Death, Etc., and a Bike Ride Across America." Well, while you're doing this, life is going on with other people, or in your case, also death.
Yes.
Your best friend, Billy, died from a long battle with cancer just a couple of weeks after you'd started your trip. Mm-hmm. He'd encourage you to take the trip knowing that he might die?
Well, I had gone to see him the month before, and I thought I had said my goodbyes then, but he actually, interestingly enough, he actually was trying to discourage me from taking the trip. He was worried about my safety. He said, "You're crazy. Don't do this. It's too dangerous."
Is there an optimum time to do this? You left in July, didn't you?
Yes.
And went through October, which means riding through the East Coast in the fall.
Right.
And they get kind of cold. Would you have done better to have left in April or May?
You can do it. I mean, one of the reasons I left in the middle of the summer, knowing that I would be bicycling into the fall, was because I wanted to see the seasons change from the road. I mean, it was actually quite lovely, and I took the northern route because I didn't want to be riding across Arizona and Texas in the middle of August. But I was interested in riding in the fall. Summertime is beautiful, but you have to deal with the heat.
Well, were you able to pick roads that you knew would be friendly to bicyclists?
Sometimes, and sometimes not. I mean, there's a lot of you know, there's a lot of guesswork on a trip like this.
I'm assuming that there were some stretches that were really tough and others that mm-hmm. were pretty easy.
Yes.
But these are not things that you can choose. When you come to the Rockies,
you have to climb them. I mean, there really is no.
And then I guess you can console yourself with the thought, well, after I climb them, it's going to be downhill a lot.
There was a place just after I got out of Glacier National Park, which, you know, if people have never been there, I really recommend it. It's spectacular. But just after I got out of the park, there's one more climb in the Rockies, and I got to the top of that. Just above Browning, Montana, and you stand at the top of the hill, and I swear to God, it feels like you can see New York. It's the entire continent is laid out before you.
It's where Saul Steinberg
That's right.
was inspired to do his cartoon.
It must be the place where somebody invented the phrase, it's all downhill from here.
But when you go downhill, it can be scary too, especially... Yeah. If it's a steep downhill.
And curvy, yeah. But I think most people would tell you they prefer that to the other way around.
Now, this isn't only about your cross-country trip. You also included the story of a three-week bike ride in Hanoi.
Mm-hmm. In Vietnam, from Hanoi to Saigon.
How is that trip connected to this one?
Well, I think of this book as a memoir, as a kind of a cycling memoir. I use the two cross-country trips as kind of a experiential bookends to talk about what happened to me over the course of the last 20 years. That it's, I suppose thematically, it's about how American men think about themselves as they grow older, using my own life as a case history. And in my case, certainly men of my age, the war in Vietnam was a colossal part of our young manhood, whether you went as a soldier or whether you stayed home. And I had the chance to cycle in Vietnam in 1995, just before the United States normalized relations with Vietnam. And I used that trip to think about what Vietnam meant to me as a young man.
Now, you also were on this one able to meet up and ride with your girlfriend, Jan. Mm-hmm. Did that have an impact on your relationship?
I should say so. It was a great 3 days. She flew over from Paris to meet me for 3 days, which is where she was living at the time. And I'm very happy to say she's now moved in with me. So
that brought you closer together.
It definitely did.
Are you
definitely
going on joint bike rides these days?
She's pushing me. She would like to do a cross-country trip. But I told her I only do it every 17 years, or every 18 years.
Now, when you were sending in you in effect blogging at mm-hmm. the New York Times, what was the reaction of readers?
There was a lot of enthusiasm. People were sort of felt as though I was acting out a fantasy for them. That was the gist of a lot of the emails, which were great, and a lot of the comments on the blogs. You know, they were cheering me on. There was also a very staunch cohort of naysayers who thought that I was being self-indulgent and who thought that I was a lousy bicyclist, that I'd been overcharged for my bicycle, that I had all the wrong equipment.
Some of my listeners were also responding to what you were writing.
Yes.
That's the sort of thing they write into the show about. on the other hand, as a learning experience for bicycling, do you think that you're a better bicyclist now?
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. I mean, you can't. It just in terms of practice, you know, this was 3 months worth of training and practice, and getting comfortable in various situations. And so, yes, I'm. I feel much more comfortable. I mean, I was a pretty experienced bicyclist to begin with, but now I feel pretty comfortable in just about any situation.
There have been other books about bicycling.
Mm-hmm. Many.
And did you read them in preparation for this?
Some of them, I read a little bit. As I say, this was I was very aware that that what I was going to say about bicycling is not going to be certainly not the first one to recognize that bicycling is an excellent way to see the landscape. What I thought was original about the book was how I was going to hang my own story on both of these trips.
Bruce Weber is an obituary writer for the New York Times. He began his career as a fiction editor at Esquire. He's been with The Times since 1986 as a magazine editor, Metro reporter, national arts correspondent, theater columnist and critic, among other things. And he's the author of a number of books, bestsellers, in fact. The latest is Life is a Wheel, Love, Death, Etc., and A Bike Ride Across America, published by Scribner.